Hello?
What?
I'm on the block, dummy.
True.
Oh, why? I just rolled past your dummy. Alright, spin back around, stupid.
They see me, they like dumb dumb.
Dumb wait.
They like dumb dumb.
Dumb wait.
They see me, they like dumb dumb.
Dumb wait, dumb wait.
They like dumb dumb.
Dumb wait.
I'm like, we live in dumb dumb.
Dumb wait, dumb wait.
We live in dumb dumb.
Dumb
wait. I'm like, we live in dumb dumb.
Dumb wait, dumb wait.
We live in dumb dumb.
Dumb
wait. They see me, they like dumb dumb. Out the mud, that's where I come from.
Dumb
they
wait.
Like them guns in your video.
Dumb wait.
Boy, that's dumb dumb.
Dumb
I'm
wait.
Like, I had to let them know that we got dumb guns.
Dumb
enough for everybody. When we bust, we go ahead down front.
Wait.
I had to leave that new funky.
All right, folks, welcome back. That is Young Moose, one of Baltimore's greats, has been through a lot. And we've talked about him on the show before, and he's been a part of many conversations we've had. And we're now here with Lawrence Birney, who is the True Laurels editor of a magazine he started, and he writes for Vice and Noisy. He wrote this article for Noisy, right?
Yeah, Noisy.
Noisy. How a Dirty Baltimore Cop's Vendetta Derailed a Promising Rapper's Career. And Lawrence, welcome. Good to have you in the house.
Thanks for having me. It's always a good time being here.
Y'all can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can write to us here by email, talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, but do join in. So, yeah, man, so let's start. This is, congratulations on your magazine.
Thank you, thank you.
That's a beautiful-looking issue.
Thank you. Worked really hard on this. My girlfriend Teresa Cromati designed it. I cover most of the content. I commission photographers and writers who are either from Baltimore or have lived here, people I've crossed paths with over the past couple of years. And yeah, the whole point is just really giving inner city Baltimore a mirror to look at itself, something I never had when I was growing up, and it's something I'm trying to contribute to.
Well, you're dedicated to.
Yeah, I'm dedicated to. Given to the city, and hopefully 20 years from now people can look back and have 50 issues to look at to know what was going on during this time.
So how can you buy those issues?
You can go to truelaurels.com. It'll direct you to the purchase link. It'll be in a few retail spots across the country soon. I don't want to say when, but it'll be very soon.
You're working
soon.
On it.
Yeah, working on it, all working right. on it.
But it looks good. It looks good, man. It looks
Thank
beautiful.
You.
So talk about this article and why you wrote this thing on Young Moose. And
well, I mean, it's been a story that's been going on for a really long time. If you're from Baltimore, you follow the rap scene or everything that's coming out of the rap world here, you know who Young Moose is. Him and Lil Scooter definitely regenerated an interest in rap coming out of the city. And ever since they started popping in like 2014, it's been a lot of young artists coming out of the city, artists getting signed, labels looking at the city to see what's coming out of it. But also what's ran parallel with Moose's music career is his legal troubles. Ever since he's popped off, he's been in and out of jail every year, seems like. And he always is very vocal about what he's going through. And he would always talk about this one cop named Daniel T. Herschel. And if you're from the East Side, it's a good chance that you heard this guy's name before, because his reputation, it rings loud on the East Side, because he's a suspected dirty cop. He has a lot of
he was one of the six
officers indicted for federal racketeering. But even before that, he had already cost the city about $200,000 in brutality cases. Allegedly broke a guy's jaw by beating him in the face with a walkie-talkie. Allegedly broke a 19-year-old woman's arm back in 2007. It's just a lot of dirt on this guy, and a lot of people may be reluctant to listen to somebody like Moose because what people think his music represents. You know, he covers a lot of violence that he claims to participate in. He raps about selling drugs, and usually when it's somebody who comes from that world, people don't want to listen to what they have to say, and it seems like he's turned out to be right.
Turned out to be right about?
About Herschel, about Officer Herschel.
He actually went after Herschel in his songs, right?
Yeah, yeah. Right? He had a song, After Police, that came out in 2014, where he talked about like his first run-ins with police. He talked about... He didn't really specify what went on between him and Herschel, but he did mention Herschel's name. And according to Moose's according to Moose's father, from what he told me, that song got him on Herschel's radar. That made him a target back in 2013, 2014, because it got to the Eastern District of the police department. Herschel didn't like that. Moose called him out because he's used to treating people a certain way and not having to deal with any consequences from it, because he's a cop, he can do whatever he wants. But Moose has a platform that most young black people just don't have. He has hundreds of thousands of people who are tapped into every move that he makes.
From across America.
From across America, but especially in Baltimore. He's looked at as a legend.
So what made, I'm going to come back to Herschel in a moment.
Okay.
But what made Moose a legend, young Moose a legend?
Well, I think that Moose, he helped establish a generation of young people who believed in themselves. A lot of young people that I've met along the way just growing up that do music. A lot of people think that you can't make it coming from Baltimore when you make it in music, because when you look in the industry, it's not a lot of examples. We got,
right. You
know, we got Drew Hill and, you know, Cisco, Mario, but they all do R&B. We had a couple rappers pop, like B. Rich, Boss Man had a nice moment, Los. But these are people who may have gotten some mainstream success but never really resonated with the city. Moose and Scooter were some of the first rappers who really...
Scooter who was shot just...
Yeah, right, yeah, Scooter who died last year.
Right, right.
They really captured the essence of what it is to be from Baltimore City, from the slang to the accent to the dances. You know, I don't think you would have been able to look back 10 years ago at any of the rappers who had some success and really understood what Baltimore was, what life was like in this city.
What makes the music and words of somebody out of Baltimore, like Scooter or Moose, different than what might come out of Chicago, New York, LA, or some other place?
I mean, the stories are very similar, you know.
Right.
The inner city, a lot of people face the same challenges, but every city has something small that makes it unique, even if it's just the way that the person is talking to you or the way the type of production that they might choose to rap over. But I think what really brought people close to Moose is that he's a storyteller. He talks about what he's been through in his life. He talks about losing his grandmother. He talks about losing his first child before even leaving the hospital, about losing a lot of close friends to death in jail. He talks about his own experiences in jail. So these are things that a lot of young kids go through but don't feel like they have a voice or somebody that even is going to care, and he does.
But the way you wrote the article, and, you know, I mean, I listen to all kinds of music, but the way you wrote the article, and other people have said this as well, there's something different about what comes out of Baltimore.
Yeah, I mean, every city has something special about it, and I think Baltimore is a very raw place, very eccentric place. You know, we're a little weird, I guess, if you compare it to other places, our mannerisms, the way we talk. And I think it wouldn't be, maybe it wouldn't be so concentrated on if we had somebody who has broken out to the mainstream before. So I think when you feel like you're overlooked, it makes you pay attention to the little things that make you special, because those things that make you special could also be the things that people overlook you for, you know? So I think what we've done with Moose and Scooter and other artists that came out of that is we took some things that we felt like may have been strange, or people, you know, the Baltimore accent is ugly or something like that, and turned it into something beautiful.
So you, one thing you said in the article was you even talked about why sometimes it's hard for Baltimore rappers to make it across the country because of language, because of the way people speak, because of the way people perform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's to be honest, it's really hard to pinpoint what it is. And I think that's what a lot of people are trying to find out, is why hasn't somebody broken from here? So when you just don't know, I think you just search for things. Oh, it must be this or it must be that. But I think that Moose is one of the artists that's helping change the tide, because ever since he and Scooter broke out, you've seen more success stories. You've seen the guy Tate Cobain get signed to 300. He had the big song Bankrolls. Now we have a young kid, Band Hunter Izzy, who just got signed to Republic Records last week. A young kid out of Westside. Got some kids out of Woodlawn called the Creek Boys that just also got signed to 300. So I think all the attention that he generated brought labels here.
So the article, you focus as much on Moose as and the music as but also on Herschel and the interaction with the, between the police. And this is a huge story going on. I think that this is part of a story that I think that Baynard Woods is also writing for the city paper coming up as well, right?
Baynard and Brandon Soderberg have been following this following this real closely, like every step of the way for the past 3 years or so.
So let's talk a bit about part of the heart of the article, which has to do with this interaction between the police and Moose and why it occurred and what it says about what the situation is out here.
Well, I think it, what I really was trying to do with this story is to really show that people, young people here are up against a lot. You know, it's not just people complaining about police being corrupt. This has all been proven. The DOJ had a report on the Baltimore City Police Department and it found that they had discriminatory practices. 44% of the people who get stopped are only in two neighborhoods in the whole city, which only make up 11% of the full population. Half of the stops that they're making are in these two neighborhoods. Then you have the federal indictment of these six officers. I had to read a 45-page indictment, and it has the tap phone calls. It has everything they do on a daily basis, and it's basically riding around and robbing people. And some of these people aren't even criminals. A couple of the situations in the story, it was just people who had money for rent to go get a money order.
They took the man's rent and paycheck.
And they just take the person's paycheck and send them along their way. It's, what can you do about it? So I think that's why somebody like Moose is so crucial to highlight, somebody that will speak out against this, knowing that it's not going to be in his best interest to do it.
So Moose, because of the way what he talked about was targeted.
Yeah.
You're saying because he was exposing it through his music.
Right. And I don't even think it's just, a lot of people talk about police in their music, but I think that he was a threat because of how much of a, how big of a platform he has, how powerful he is. I mean, a lot of, during the uprising, just walking around and driving in my car, I heard a lot of kids who were in the streets protesting or looting or doing whatever they were doing, they were rapping Moose's songs because he speaks directly against police mistreating citizens. So I think he was one of the people soundtracking what was going on in 2015.
And I think that it was a, you know, just a bit of a digression. I was thinking about every time I read your article, I was thinking about the No Boundaries Coalition report that came out after the uprising, and it didn't necessarily always focus on the overt brutality, but the thing that stood out the most to me was the verbal and psychological abuse that citizens face every day. I mean, that's, you know, you feel it in what you wrote.
Yeah, I mean, you can just feel it just being out in the street. I mean, if most neighborhoods in the inner city, not most, but a lot of neighborhoods in the city are like under surveillance around the clock, whether it's the blue cameras or just police just camped out in people's neighborhoods. It's never a moment of peace of mind. If it feels like the only time I've ever lived in a neighborhood in Baltimore where I felt like police were there to protect was when I lived on 29th in Maryland for about a year and a half, right across the street from Hopkins.
Right.
And it was the only time I felt like a police officer was really there to help me, because I lived next door to a frat house and they were more unruly than most people I ever met in my life. I mean, every night somebody was passed out on their porch. They would have liquor and beer cans on their porch. They would be screaming, blasting music till 4 o'clock in the morning, and the police would just be there watching it. Now, if that was a few minutes up the street on Greenmount, it couldn't be the same. And you don't even have to, and it's just unspoken. You can feel that energy when a police officer is near you.
So what was your conclusion after interviewing, spent a lot of time interviewing Moose at the job he had to take was in a halfway house? Well, I know what to ask before I do that. So was Herschel the cop that arrested Moose? No.
He's arrested Moose. He's shown up on four or five of Moose's criminal cases since 2012. He first locked Moose up in 2012 when he was 19, and that kept going on until 2015. Excuse me. He didn't lock Moose up for the misdemeanor gun charge that got him in jail for 8 months. But Moose's family believes that Herschel was behind it, even though his name isn't anywhere on the charges.
Which is why his case was not affected when Marilyn Mosby and those guys that decided to drop charges against people.
Herschel was not on that.
It was on that. Okay. Yeah. That's why I didn't understand.
So a lot of people close to Moose think that Herschel has calculated almost everything, all his interactions with Moose. He in 2014 when he was about to open up for Boosie, which would have been his biggest opportunity ever.
Also just came out of jail a little bit ago.
Yeah, Boosie got out of jail, I think, about a year before that show. And he's dealt with a lot of the same things in Louisiana and Baton Rouge, where he's from. But Herschel locked Moose up 4 days before that show, even though it was 3 weeks after the raid that he conducted at one of Moose's family's properties. And Moose wasn't even present for the raid. So, you know, you can't like definitively say he's doing this on purpose, but it seems that way to me.
So you spent all this time talking to Moose at the shopping center at East Point.
Yeah, right? I spent about a day. Well, we talked on the phone before that day, and then I spent about a day with him at East Point. And the funny thing is that I was already doing the story just because Moose was working at an embroidery shop in East Point, which is already a crazy enough story. He's like, he can't even barely walk the streets without fans bum rushing him, and he's working inside the mall. So I already thought that was a crazy enough story. I started it in January, and then while I was working on that story, the indictment happened in March. So it just made the story grow even more when I saw that Herschel was one of the officers, and I was like, whoa.
So what does Moose have to say about the fact that A, he's coming off parole, he's going to go back into the world of business, but B, he's thinking about Herschel, not Herschel's been indicted?
He didn't really want to talk about.
So I got that sense from the article. Didn't want to talk about it at all.
Yeah, he didn't really. The only person that I could talk, the closest person I could talk to was his father about Herschel. And his family stands strongly behind being targeted by Herschel. They Herschel has sat outside of their store on Miami Street on a daily basis, they claim, for a long time. He supposedly broke into the store, broke into a safe, stole $8,000, and this is his MO on the street. And it's not just on the street, it's backed up in the indictment.
Right.
So it's so many layers to the story. I was really trying to and thanks to Kyle Kramer, my editor at Noisy, we really worked hard on making this a narrative so it can read like a story, because there's so much information to go through that I think it served better to be read as a movie, basically, or something close to it.
It felt like that was as you were reading the story.
Yeah,
you could see it cinematically.
I was trying to break it down into scenes because.
Right.
I mean, it would have been a decent story if it was just, you know, very straightforward. These are the Kohar facts. But for a story like this, these kind of stories don't come along very often where a rapper is proven right about a cop. And not only is he proven right, the cop is federally indicted. It's just a lot of layers to it. I mean, cops target rappers all around the country, but they never actually get in trouble.
But part of why he was targeted was because, in some ways, as you put it, for want of a better way, on a term for the moment, he was the Bard of East Baltimore.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's just a crazy story. I'm really curious to see what the outcome is with these officers. I mean, most people don't believe that anything is going to happen to him, but it doesn't seem like the police department is backing him in any way.
Yeah,
at this point.
These guys might. I actually, for the first time, think these guys might actually get time.
Yeah,
this is a federal indictment too,
right.
Which is different than a city indictment. This is different than the state's attorney bringing a case.
Right,
the jury pool is different. Everything's different. So I mean, this is
And like I said, the indictment document is just mind blowing. I mean, you know that cops do things like this, but when you actually are reading their phone calls and them talking to each other, it just makes it more surreal.
It's a vindication of everything Moose sang about.
Yeah.
Rapped about.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So what happens to him now?
Well, it seems that he's about to be done with this case, but just last week, the Sun reported that he's being tied to a homicide from 2015 because of a song that he made against somebody. Like a diss song. He had a rap beef with a guy named Nasty, I think. and that guy ended up dying like 3 months after the rap beef. And now Moose's song could be used as evidence for the guy dying. So it's really hard to tell, and this just seems to be like a run parallel with Moose's music career is his legal troubles.
But yeah, I thought also he was kind of, is he just, I mean, national with Boosie?
Well, Boosie signed him to his
label,
Badass Music Syndicate. I don't know the specifics of the deal. I don't know if it's a handshake deal. I don't know if it's a, you know, written, you know, it's etched in stone. But he was publicly supporting Moose online and stuff like that. So I know that's Moose's top priority, is to be able to relocate to Atlanta so he can start recording and, you know, getting his business in order.
Yeah, the other thing to think about, Lawrence, I was thinking about this, talking to D. Watkins a little bit ago about this too, that, I mean, your writing this stuff is really important for society, but also for young people in the city to say, I can write, I can tell a story.
Exactly.
I can make something creative.
Yeah, and that's really, I'm not going to say that's why I write, but it's definitely one of the things that keeps me motivated, because we don't, me and D are both working at, you know, major publications, and it's rare it's rare that you see somebody who comes from a similar environment.
And both from Baltimore.
Yeah. So both from the east side of Baltimore.
That's right.
So
right.
It's and not even just being from here, it's just you don't really get to see people that you feel like you grew up with in those spaces. So I think it's super important for us to be doing what we're doing. I got the opportunity to interview Michael K. Williams for on camera for Vice, and I never really had any aspirations of being on camera before, but I realized how important it was for me to do it, just so young black kids can see somebody like me.
I didn't see you interviewed Mike Williams on camera.
Yeah,
I got to see that.
This was about 2 months ago, but yeah, okay. I can send it to you.
I want to see that.
Yeah, and that was a great honor, and not only did I do it for myself, but I did it because I know that if I would have seen somebody like me doing something like that, I mean, I did on like stuff like BET and stuff like that. And that definitely motivated me.
Yeah, this is different.
Yeah, this is a little different. And I think the more...
Because Vice is more universal.
Yeah, the more people that we see like ourselves, hopefully the more kids we're inspired to do it. And that's really why I'm doing the zine also, because I want to create that archive for people to be able to look back. Because I don't have a magazine from 1990 to look back and see what was going on.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And that's just... the guy you interview, Mike Williams, he's a really decent human being.
Yeah.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah, I mean, we only got to kick it for that time of the interview, but even within that, I mean, I already felt like I knew him because he was Omar, so nothing really felt like I had to prepare myself to talk to him or anything, because he seemed so spot on with that character. And I told him I really appreciated him being one of the few non-Baltimoreans who seemed to really try to catch the essence of being from here on The Wire. Most characters on The Wire, you could tell they were from New York. They weren't trying to change
or
anything. He actually put in the effort.
Oh, no, the way he spoke, the accent he gave,
everything. He told me he spent a lot of time in Lexington Market and just like walking around with his Walkman from North Avenue from the east to the west side and just really just catching everything.
Right. No, he's amazing.
And you could tell.
But, you know, man, it's always good to see you. Lawrence Burney, just a True Laurels editor, writer for Vice and Noisy, and this piece in Noisy, how a dirty Baltimore cop's vendetta derailed a promising rapper's career about Young Moose. We'll be linking to that story and to more. It's always a pleasure to have you here, man. I'm so happy to see your success.
Thank you.
See you rolling. It's a really beautiful thing.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Always good to see you.
All right.
And we're going to go out a little bit here with Young Moose again, Panda Remix, as we go out. And I want to thank you all for being part of the show today. As always, always great to have everybody with us here on the Mark Steiner Show. That is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our senior producer is Mark Gunnery. Our producer is Imani Spence. Our research producer is Calvin Perry. Our production assistant is Nadi Ramlagan. Our intern is Morgan Senior Michael Dixon. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. Please send me your thoughts about today's program to talkatsteinershow.org. The podcast, Mark Steiner Show, and share it with your friends. Visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. I was
around get smoked. I slide down like hey hey, then Browns had you some toast. Gonna drink you like with a KKK and hang that by rope. You know I stay with the rocket. My father tried to tell me stop it. My big cousin said hell no, and to make sure that you cock it. If I send them boys on my roster, they gon' have your brains like some pasta. But if I get out the car, you ain't gotta worry about the dollar.